Pastor Mai, good afternoon. We're on Man in Line, open line today through till 1. Call 66 13 68, text and WhatsApp 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. Well, this new employment initiative that you heard about is aiming to retrain and reskill younger people on the Isle of Man who are unemployed due to mental health issues. Have you got anything to say on this? It's called Making Work Worthwhile and is targeting 18 to 30-year-olds who feel excluded but want to re-enter the workforce. If you've got any experience of this, perhaps you yourself, or you know somebody is, or perhaps you're a parent or guardian, is this true? There are, apparently, we don't have a problem with youth unemployment, but Alex Allenson, the Treasury Minister, said today there's a cohort of people out of work due to mental health issues that aren't in work. Now, were you aware of this? Did you know anything about this? This is what the Treasury Minister had to say.
We're not talking about taking away benefits. Also on the Isle of Man, we don't have a significant problem with youth unemployment. We know that there are jobs out there. We know there's training there. Last week, we announced expanding apprenticeships on the Isle of Man to give those people the skills. But what we are aware of is a cohort of people between 18 and 30 who, for a range of reasons, particularly mental health reasons like depression and anxiety, have come out of work, are on incapacity benefit, and we know the longer they're on those benefits, the longer they're out of work, the harder it is to get back into work. So this is an attempt to get people who feel excluded back into work, back into society, but by doing it the right way, with a six-month program of training, of career assessment, of individual therapy and group therapies to help them overcome those barriers and actually get back into active employment and feel more better self-esteem and more worthwhile.
Now, looking at the latest unemployment figures, that age group is the highest in terms of unemployment, but there are still a significant amount of people out of work in the 40s and 50s and 60s bracket as well. Why not offer this to all ages?
What we're looking here is particularly those people who are out of work for particular reasons, such as mental health issues. And we know that seems to have been an increasing problem over the last couple of years. If we can get those younger people back into work, give them skills to do that, we can stop them going into long-term unemployment. But we've also got various schemes for those slightly older people in terms of reskilling, retraining, giving them the IT skills they may need. And what I would say is, if there's anyone who's listening who's been out of work for any long period of time, please go and have a chat with the employment team at Social Security. They can actually help you go back into the workplace, show you the range of jobs that are available out there, particularly in terms of hospitality and retail. We've also got a drop-in event tomorrow between 10 and 12 at Markwell House about the programme we're launching for younger people to support them overcome the difficulties they're having.
Well, I don't know. That's new to me. I don't know about, is it new to you, but this cohort of 18 to 30-year-olds who aren't working because of mental health issues and how to get them out of it. Well, let's hope something comes of that for both sides, really. And as I say, if you're involved in that, if you've got experience of it, I'd like to hear from you. I think we've found Adam now. Hello, Adam.
Hello, Andy. Have you got me this time?
Yes, I've just put a shilling in the meter.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you. I was listening to some of last week's Man in Line programmes on Listen Again.
Yeah.
And I was concerned to hear that religious education might be under threat in the island's high schools. When I was doing my GCSEs 22 years ago, I did religious education. And far from it being about indoctrination, it was about considering the nature of a variety of faiths, particularly Christianity and Islam at GCSE level. Although I know that the A-level syllabus is more about comparing Christianity to Buddhism. They do, however, look at a range of religions, including Sikhism, Hinduism and Judaism, as well as those that I've already mentioned. But we have to remember that the Isle of Man is a society rooted in Christianity, and our landscape and traditions are full of references to it in the forms of church buildings or crosses or our calendar, among others. Spiritualism has always been important to the Manx people, and the Isle of Man also has a pagan tradition of Wicca and witchcraft, as it was the refuge place for the Welsh Druids following the Roman invasion of Britain when they were expelled from Anglesey. So back in the 1960s, Gerald Gardner based many of the practices in modern Wicca and witchcraft on Manx folklore. So given this deep-rooted attraction to spirituality and mysticism in the Isle of Man, why would we now want to turn our backs on all things religious in the 21st century?
Interesting. You don't hear much about Gerald Gardner, but as you say, he was based here for quite a while.
He was down at the old Witch's Mill in Castletown, wasn't he? And he had this Museum of Black Arts and whatever was there. And it was a much more atmospheric place then than it is now. It's an apartment, apartment.
Adam, what did you get from your RE lessons at school? I mean, personally, what do you remember?
Well, I think, Andy, religion teaches you to think in a philosophical way that is distinct and different from science. And obviously many subjects you do in school are either physical or social sciences. But it's the only subject that considers metaphysical and ethical questions that are fundamental to human experience, like the nature of reality, the meaning of life, or distinguishing between right and wrong from a non-scientific point of view. And I think it teaches children to respect each other and to consider each other's self-worth as human beings and their humanity. It encourages everybody, I think, to reflect that there may be some greater point to life and to each human life, and that each human life might have a purpose other than our biological and evolutionary inclination to reproduce. I mean, we live in a world full of liberal ideas, many of which ultimately come from Karl Marx. He was opposed to all things religious, and these include ideas that society is divided into groups defined by horizontal and vertical divisionary boundaries, such as class, gender, or ethnicity. And I think reductionist liberalism, based on social science, has led to the perception that people are divided into categories, each with different value or expectations of what is socially acceptable for them. And religious education actually challenges this perception by considering things like our Christian God's great commandment, love thy neighbour as thou love thyself, for example. I think it makes us think about whether our purpose is to be controlled by human nature or to overcome it.
Wow. Well, that's very, very wide-ranging. Just a final point. People have said in the past that religion, I mean, talking about religion is so big, enormous, that doing it in school might be just scratching the surface. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think that's very true. I mean, I think there's room for more philosophical discussion at school, and you can actually do an A-level if you wanted to. There's an A-level available. I don't know if it's taught in any of the Island High School, but there's A-levels available in philosophy and ethics and all that kind of thing as well. So they are obviously related subjects, which you could do at school. And art actually gets quite philosophical, but not at the high school level. But I think, Andy, besides all that I've said today, RE at school actually teaches children about such things as the contents of churches and the island's churches. You know, they've been treasured by the last 1,000 years worth of generations. And for students to know what's found inside a church, I just think it helps them understand the places of worship that have been of such value to our ancestors and treasured by them.
Okay.
And if I can just make one last point, Andy.
Yeah.
I think it goes, there's this desire in Tynwald, this kind of left-wing desire to, and I'm a social democrat, Andy. I believe in, you know, some wealth redistribution and economic social democracy, but I'm also a small-T conservative because I think you have to preserve the traditions of society. And there's this desire in Tynwald to get rid of religious education or to get rid of the bishop. And the bishop should also be there as a moral voice in Tynwald. She's a woman of great experience, and she served as chaplain to the Speaker of the House of Commons in England. You know, she'll have a far more developed philosophy of morality than many other members of LegCo, and she'll have better political connections as well. So I think it's imperative that she retains her vote, and I think it would desecrate the constitution to remove it from her, and I think it's essential that religious education continues to be taught in schools.
Okay, appreciate it, Adam. Thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, 17 minutes past 12. Peter's with us now. Hello, Peter.
Oh, hello, and hello, Andy. It's Peter Murcott here. Very interesting conversation there. But what I want to speak about is on a very practical point, and that is about gas supplies. We have gas central heating. I'm not a global warmer. I would like to see the Climate Act Act either repealed or very considerably amended. But we have to live with it. I wanted to know what is the future for gas? Because in the property in which we live, which is typical of one in Douglas, you cannot really do without it, because we have gas central heating. We also burn coal fires. And our electricity just does not heat the house, I mean, unless you're going to pay exorbitant amounts. So I wanted to find out, what is the future for gas supply, you know, and the continuation thereof?
Yeah.
So I went to the obvious place, which would be Murdoch House. Very helpful there. They've now got a dedicated team who, you know, you can go in there now and you can get information. I went in, extremely helpful, as they always were, and they didn't know. The person I dealt with didn't know what future was, because we had a gas boiler from them not too long ago. And I wanted to know whether there was likely to be any cut-off point, and et cetera, et cetera. So I went instead. I made a response to the latest consultation about the windmills out at sea, and I delivered that to the Cabinet Office. And while I was there, I asked if anybody there knew. Very helpful, as they always are, very courteous, you know, really are helpful. I saw two people, they didn't know. So they put me, very helpfully, with the handset of the telephone, put me on to another department, and I can't just recall which one it was. Spoke with them, they didn't know. But they, in turn, told me that there is, I believe, there's something called an energy team who would know. So they gave me the number to ring for that, with the courtesy of their telephone. And there wasn't any reply, because there's nobody there at the moment. So I'm still in the dark. I'm going to keep trying that number. But what I think this throws up is this. Really, given the importance of gas as a source of energy for many, many people in the island, really, there ought to be a lot more publicity. And one shouldn't have to do all this digging around to find out what's going on. And it seems to me absolutely not only extraordinary, it's totally unacceptable.
What's your primary concern, Peter?
Well, my primary concern is this. If you look at the houses in Douglas, I believe you live in Douglas as well, you look at most of the houses in Douglas, They are not suitable for all the things that the climate change people want. I mean, they were built... you're not going to have underfloor heating in these places. In any way, it doesn't work, because we lived in a house once that had it, and it was extremely expensive and very inefficient. You can't fit, I've been told by someone in any event, not that I want heat pumps, but evidently they can't do it with these. We would have huge expense in having to reorganise the place, pay exorbitant bills with regard to electricity. And at the end of the road, we'd be, quite frankly, we wouldn't be warm in here, because we already use heaters just to boost up the place. But as a primary source of heat, they're no use in these fairly large houses. And there are a lot of them in the Isle of Man, not only in Douglas, but in Peel, in Castletown, in Port Erin, and in Ramsey. In fact, the majority of people, I would have thought, are probably in the same boat as me. So why aren't we having some very, very clear explanation of exactly what the future holds? And I find it extraordinary. I mean, I'm a seasoned campaigner, and I'll go digging around, but most people won't feel able to do that. They're not geared up for that sort of thing. So why haven't we got a very, very clear policy? And the same goes for coal. We have coal fires. I've no idea how long they're going to, when somebody's going to put the, you know, stop the coal. So I suppose the trains will stop running. I just think it's unacceptable. And I think it really ought to be an election issue. And coming back to what I said last time around, I do so agree with Stu Peters, who wants this to become a source of a referendum at the next election, because we ought to have a referendum as to whether we agree with the way the climate change people are going, because they seem to be, I would suggest, they are in a very small minority, but unfortunately, they have all the levers of power.
Well, I mean, your point about coal fires is interesting, because nobody has said out loud when coal fires are going to be made illegal. Oh, no, for that matter, wood fires. And whether it's going to be the towns, or is it going to be the villages, or what is it going to be? So, as you say, there are lots and lots of, you know, this time of the year, you smell them when somebody fires up a coal fire. You can tell it's happening. But I don't think we've had an official word on when coal fires will be outlawed, as we I mean, some new gas boilers in new buildings will be outlawed at some point in the future.
This is the whole point, Andy. And what I think needs to happen at the next election is, I think, one of the primary issues to be put before the electorate, and I intend to ask these, and I hope other people do the same, is about this whole climate change agenda, because it's running very badly out of control. And there's another point here, and then I must ring off because I can't delay for other people coming in. If you think about it, we have some hostile international forces at work. Now, suppose we go ahead with all these windmills out at the sea. We're making ourselves very vulnerable, you know, because how do we know that in the future, and we've seen how international politics have developed in Europe very recently, how do we know that in the future, as one of the undercover attacks that take place on certain countries in this part of the world is not where they're just actually felling these windmills just like trees in the forest, using, well submarines, drone submarines, which I believe are sort of some new development, and they could hold a whole country to ransom. If they're going to be leaning on one form of energy, it would be quite relatively easy to hold a country to ransom. And I don't think they've even thought through, leave aside the fact that global science is very controversial, all the climate change science is controversial. The fact is that they haven't considered some of the implications of leaning on one source of energy and how vulnerable that might make a country in the future.
Okay. All right. Peter, there we are. We appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you very
Thanks
much.
For calling today.
Yes.
Thank you. And Julian joins us now. Hello, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How are you doing?
Very well. Thanks. Yeah.
Good, good, good. Yeah, I came across a recently published document from the UK government titled Contracts for Difference, Methodology Used to Set Administrative Strike Prices for CFD Allocation Round 7. What that basically means is the government, how it works out how much of taxpayer money is given to renewable on and offshore wind farms.
Right, CFD is CFD, Contract for Difference, is that right?
Yeah, just read that as the subsidies, really.
Right, okay.
What caught my eye on this new document is on page 12, under the heading at the bottom of the page, load factors, which is how much energy is being generated by the wind farms annually. A couple of sentences. I quote, the power curves have lower power output in comparison to previous assumptions. And the most shocking one is, this has resulted in a significant increase in administrative strike prices for these technologies. So the UK government's own new document is saying that the far less electricity is actually being produced by the wind farms, so we need to pay more to prop them up, according to their own document. So as Michelle Hayward said yesterday, the science keeps evolving. And sure enough, if you want to look at the definitive UK government document that shows exactly how much actual energy is coming out of all these wind farms, that document is titled The Digest of UK Energy Statistics. And that's published by the UK Department for Energy Security and Net Zero, which is usually called DESNZ. Now, they've lowered its five-year average load factor coming out of all these onshore wind farms down to a figure of 25, roughly, percent, 25.34. But we're being told in the press right now that Kervai Wind Farm could give us 65%. So the average in the UK, according to their latest data, which is being rounded down, is 25-ish. So we're talking 65, which is 157% more than the UK average, which to me is completely impossible. So in other words, as the UK government are lowering their wind farm energy estimates, we're skyrocketing on this island with a potential never put in place wind farm. So I'm kind of confused by how the UK government's own documents are saying this.
Well, you know what Andy's favourite number is, don't you, Julian? Because this is the one that everybody has to remember. What's Andy's favourite number?
Go on.
29p.
Yes.
All you have to do is imagine 29p is the lighthouse that you look at. And if only somebody somewhere would say what our electricity is going to cost in the near in the future, whenever this happens, whatever our future is. If only somebody would commit and say it's going to be 25, might be 30, could be 40, could be 15. Until then,
you know what my favourite.
Until we get kind of words of one syllable with no acronyms, and a practical, down to earth explanation of how much our electricity is going to cost, and if we are going to rely on intermittent sources of energy, where the backup's going to come from. In the end, we're the ones who pay it. We pay the bills. You know, they would be nowhere without us paying the bills for electricity. Now, I understand that they put the infrastructure in place and this, that and the other, but we pay the bills. We pay 29p per kilowatt hour. All I'm asking is, what's it going to cost in the future, Julian?
Well, you see, my favourite number is 18, because I think that's the price that we should be paying right now, considering that the gas price, which is the primary driver for electricity costs for the to drive the power station at Pullrose, has dropped nearly 90% since the price was put up in 229p.
Right.
So my figure is around 18 pence. But a couple of takeaways from yesterday as well. Apparently, and I quote from Michelle Hayward, the data on methane has always been flaky, which begs the question. There is an ongoing assault on the agricultural sector at the moment, all about their methane emissions. Now, it turns out that the scientists at the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change have changed tack quite radically a few years ago, and they've come up with an updated new climate model. And if it was applied to our own emissions from that ETHER report, which was the one that succeeded the current report, that would show that methane's warming potential on the Isle of Man for our agriculture, and also would apply to the power station and also to vehicles, would be 72% less than we're being told. Now, the scientists, they've come up with a new one. So 30 years ago, the model was called Global Warming Potential, GWP 100, and that is what is being used and is also apparently going to be used in the new report that is being compiled at the moment by the IPCC. However, a few years ago, led by Oxford University Professor Miles Allen, who actually gave a Zoom call here a couple of years ago through to the Manx Museum, came up with a new one called GWP Star. And if you apply that to the Isle of Man, you end up with a massive drop, because the old model used to say that methane would accumulate over the years and it would just get consistently worse. It would be, imagine walking up the steps of Mordor or something. Whereas in reality, according to the IPCC scientists are, it's a kind of a flat or even a modest slight decline. So you're not accumulating every year. You have an initial pulse back when they started measuring, and then you track forward. And the only reason that it's not being brought in is the politicians are saying it's too complicated, which is interesting. But this would immediately take massive pressure off the agriculture industry, not just for here, but everywhere else, really, including the UK, where, you know, we have rain and grass, everything is grass-fed. You look in the shops, it's the best way to go.
And Ireland
as well.
And I
just wonder why. And Ireland especially, yeah. I mean, Ireland is a fantastic place for things like this.
Okay.
Michelle also... Oh, sorry, yeah. OK, all right, I'll catch up with you next time.
Do that.
Cheers.
OK, thanks. Good to hear from you, Julian. Thanks for that. And by the way, the good people from Orsted will be at Ramsey Town Hall. Well, actually, today they're at the Castletown Town Hall doing that session between 4 and 7 p.m. If you want to find out more about Moor Vannin, the Orsted wind farm off the east coast of the Isle of Man, yesterday they were at Douglas City Hall. Today, Castletown Town Hall. Tomorrow, Ramsey Town Hall. And on Friday, they're going to be at the House of Manan in Peel. So today, Castletown. Tomorrow, Ramsey. And Friday in Peel. It's 4 till 7. The public consultation is still open, by the way, till the 18th of November. They'll tell you all about that if you want to pop along and see them. Many messages came in yesterday. Couldn't get to all of them, but thanks for them all. The lady who lives down the north is quite right about the roads there. There are few, if any, road names making navigation difficult, especially as the flatlands all look the same, says Ian. And as somebody said, if you live there, you know all about it. Yeah, but what if you don't live there? If you're trying to find your way around the north, it's like Holland in places, isn't it? Anyway, we're talking about the cat's eyes yesterday. Obviously, there are 37 and three quarter miles of very fast roads on the Isle of Man without cat's eyes. Why is the course safe to drive on at night and the rest of the Isle of Man is not, says Rich. Dr. Allinson, Peter says, Dr. Allinson says the health levy's been dropped because he listened to the public. So why didn't the DOI listen to the public over the 20-mile-per-hour speed limits? And regarding roadside boundary line trees, if half is private and half is government, is the government taking preemptive action to prune limbs and branches overhanging? And who gets the bill for collecting the leaves, says Andy. And just to know, I'm just going through some of the messages we got yesterday. Didn't have time to get to Michelle Haywood, but we'll put them out anyway. Could you ask your guest if she thinks it will be a good idea for every person who pays road tax to pay it to the parish they live in, so that they know that their money's being spent on the roads or lanes of their parish only that way, instead of a country road waiting for repairs for 10 or 20 years, which could be taken out of the parish account and repaired when needed, instead of driving or riding down the same badly maintained roads. The money gained by each parish could be spent on each parish instead of the money being spent in the main big towns. So road tax to local authorities rather than the central government. My word, you could try. 228 says Andy, cat's eyes are dangerous for motorcyclists. It's a fact. We're back to the phones in a moment.
Looking to make the most of your savings? Cornerstone Bank offer a range of savings options, from fixed terms of 6 months to 3 years, to variable rate notice accounts with notice periods of 95 to 180 days. And choose monthly or annual interest, whatever works for you. For the latest rates and an application form, check out cornerstonebank.co.im. Cornerstone Bank, celebrating 90 years of community, heritage and connection. Here for the journey. All deposits are subject to status, terms and conditions apply. No early withdrawals permitted. Qualifying deposits made with Cornerstone Bank are covered by the Isle of Man Depositors Compensation Scheme as set out in the Depositors Compensation Scheme Regulations 2010.
As our loved ones age, they carry not only the memories of the past, but also the uncertainties of the future. Secure tomorrow today with Mann Benham's guidance on enduring powers of attorney and more.
It's the perfect time to plant spring bulbs and winter pansies, and there's a wide range available at Ramsey Garden Centre, plus a full range of garden essentials for indoor and out, including battery lights. Visit Ramsey Garden Centre, open 7 days a week.
We make oil heating easy with our range of services. Whether it's our free smart tank monitoring systems or just our efficient all-island deliveries, Ellen Vannin Fuels has it covered. Call us on 844-000 to find out more.
Invincible, the new single by Asta, released on the 6th of October. Available on Amazon, Apple iTunes, Spotify, Deezer and YouTube. All download proceeds will be donated to children's mental health charities.
Are Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
068 texted in to say, Andy, I approve of rural cat's eyes and I'm very glad to have them. And H said, if pension age rises, will the government be willing to pay out for people unable to work due to age-related illness? Would employers be happy to pay for staff cover for constant absence? Will the government pay out more for childcare that grandparents can't cover? Will the government pay for care for older infirm people that won't be covered by those forced to work? Will employers, a lot of questions here, H, will employers be happy with employees who don't really want to be there and whose interest in the job is zero? What happens if older workers suffer mental decline and don't have the capacity to do the job properly? Shouldn't the government be looking at getting younger people into work? This will be more difficult with jobs being blocked by older, reluctant people. They never look at the bigger picture. Well, perhaps that's what Dr. Ironson was talking about, this youth employment scheme called Making Work Worthwhile, to get this cohort of youth, 18 to 30-year-olds, who are out of work due to mental health issues. That was the story about the guy from HSBC who said that the retirement age will have to go above 70 purely to balance the books of the public sector, the pension, the state pension fund. Anyway, back to the phones. Eddie's with us now. Hello, Eddie.
Hi, Andy. How are you doing, mate? All right.
What age did you retire at, Eddie?
I'm not retired.
Well, that's what I like to hear. That's no, what I like to no. hear.
I retired at 65 because the VAT that was put on us all does your head in, so I wound my business up at 65. But I've still potted, mainly doing my own things, which gets me to one of my points, actually, yep. if I may, Andy.
Yep.
First of all, can I just suggest this numbers day? Yours is 29, Julian's is 18. Can you remember what mine is?
Go on,
you should be able to remember it.
99, your favourite ice cream.
Could be. No, it's 0.8.
Oh, yes.
1%.
Carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
No. That's the effect that the Isle of Man's population has on the world.
Right.
That is a fact. You can Google it, everything. Which gets me to agree with what Peter Murdoch was saying and Stu Peters. I totally agree with all Peter's points. My second point was I started work at 14 and a half. I left school because you could do that in them days if you had an apprenticeship to go to. Right? So I started work at 14 and a half. I've been in the building trade all my life, so along the way you pick up which is the best way of doing things. I designed my own house, I did all my own drawings, I built my own house, and not anywhere did I include some of the silly salesman's rubbish that you come across today. If you ask any honest plumber, for instance, about heat source pumps, no way would they. They will cost you an absolute fortune. You get very little out of it. It's not designed for certain houses. For instance, on my house, when I design my own house, I have a cavity all round it. It's got a 4-inch wall on the outside and 9-inch wall on the inside. No insulation in the cavity. All these modern houses are putting insulation in the cavity. What on earth use is putting insulation into the cavity? Absolute waste of time. It should be on the inside to keep the heat in once the heat is inside the house. all dead common sense things. Absolutely thingy. The other point I want to make is where Peter Murdoch was pointing out about, you know, he still uses coal and gas. An awful lot of people do. I've got a log burner in my house. It heats the whole house, right? Because of the design that I did in my house, that log fire will heat the whole house, which is open plan in the winter, warm as toast. Which gets me to the point of log burning. These lot that are on about CO2 problems, if you leave a piece of wood, say a tree falls down in the forest, a lot of them say leave it there to rot and everything, it's all good. If you burn it on your fire, as against leaving it to rot in the forest, the one in the forest gives up 3 times more CO2 than the one you burn. These are all facts.
How do you work that out? How do you know that?
It's scientific fact. Just look it up. Simple as that. When a log is rotting in the forest, it gives all its CO2 that right. It is collected, it gives it back out again.
Okay.
Whereas if you burn it, you're burning very little of it.
Isn't there the same stuff in there?
Isn't the
carbon in there? So it's the same amount of carbon, just coming out at a different rate.
Well, if you look it up yourself, you'll find out the scientific answer is 1/3 okay. as much CO2.
Right.
These are all little things that go on and on. By the way, I'll be there at the meeting this afternoon. The other point I wanted to make is there was a referendum keep getting mentioned. I don't think it will make a great deal of difference, to be honest with you. And the reason why I don't think it will make a great deal of difference, I don't care whether they do it or not, is because any MHK that wants to get a seat next time will probably not go for the green or the net zero. So they'll be going that way anyway, in my opinion. Do you think so yourself?
Well, we don't know. I mean, we don't know. I mean, many MHKs last time, or candidates, were very much on the green train. Everybody was talking about net zero and, carbon-friendly stuff and what have you. So we don't know. We'll find out next year when everybody starts declaring exactly what their thoughts are. But I think Mr. Peters is proposing a referendum. It's not the argument about net zero. He just likes the idea of a referendum to let people have their choice.
But the thing is, the people out here now, thanks to some of your show mainly, a lot of people out here have delved into it to find out the truth about things, and they have now let the general public know the truth. And the truth is not what the MUA are telling us or the government. So no longer does a green agenda mean a ha'porth, in my opinion.
All right.
It's opened it all up.
So will you be at Castletown today?
I certainly will, Andy, yes. Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling, Eddie.
Yeah, pleasure.
Good to hear from you. Yes, it's the Orsted Moore Vannin public consultation at Castletown today. Town Hall from 4 till 7. Tomorrow, Ramsey 4 till 7. And on Friday, House of Manannan in Peel from 4 till 7. Robert's on now. Hello, Robert.
Hi, how you doing?
We're very well today.
You seem a bit down. Are you okay?
Oh, no, we're fine. I'm just...
okay.
Can't wait to get out in the sunshine. That's what it is.
Right. Well, good luck with that. I'm up at the roundhouse talking about loneliness and the fact that people live in isolation during the winter months, which is, you know, loneliness can be crucial.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, devastating in terms of getting things sorted for community and what have you. I mean, it goes deeper than that. It's more serious than that. In that, Neil Mellon cropped up and said, well, once people lose hope, you know, and they start approaching the food bank and things like that, then there's a lot of other stuff that goes on that they miss out on. And quite often people can go to the doctor and say, well, look, I've got this physical ailment, and they're not actually approaching the core value needs to say, well, what's actually going on with you socially? You know, they're not actually getting to the nub of the subject. See what I mean?
So what's happening at the Roundhouse? What are they actually doing today? Is it just a chat?
The Roundhouse is, yeah, it's a conference in terms of, like, they're in the Rotunda, which is like a conference room, and they're getting people together to talk about loneliness and isolation during winter, especially. Well, I think it's just isolation generally.
Right.
And they've got heads. There's about 50 people, well, 40 or 50 people there, and so the average age is probably about 60. But they have people from Age Concern, you know, the various Alzheimer's, things like that. And they have people, the CEOs are there and stuff, talking to people to get more of a, you know, get a thing going.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I don't know whether you're aware, but every Thursday at the Woodburn Pub, they've got a thing called the Woody Club. It's on from 10 to 3. Well, we're actually going to be taking Man in Line to the Woody Club in the near future.
Brilliant.
So, I mean, and when I say a pub, it is a pub, but, I mean, everybody doesn't have to booze there. In fact, lots of people take food and, you know, there's tea and coffee and what have you, and games and just lots of fun. So the Woody, Trevor at the Woodburn has done a great job with that, and we're going to be taking Man in Line there because apparently everybody's got an opinion there. And a lot of people, as you say, are on their own. And the thought of, you know, some people are quite reticent about meeting new people. So that loneliness goes into a bit of a spiral then.
Well, I think, as I said before, there's loneliness and there's hope. Once you lose hope, which is sacrosanct, that you can't pay the bills or you haven't got enough food in, you know, things aren't going well from a health perspective, you're not quite keeping up with the tidiness and what have you, then it can get really bad. So, bad's the wrong word, but it can, you know, I don't want to put that side on it. But, I mean, it can just go a bit amiss. So it's good to keep in touch with people as best you can. And we're having the conversation on how best to broach creating a better community spirit around things and creating more of a nexus to get people together to talk about things in a frank and open manner.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's basically where we're at the moment.
I have to
head back in, so I'll do it again soon.
All right, enjoy your cup of tea. Thanks for calling today. Yes, the Woody Club is on every Thursday at the Woodburn Pub. On Alexander Drive. It's a free session from 10 till 3 every Thursday. There's games, there's food, there's fun, and lots of people there. So we're going to be taking Man in Line just to see what they have to say. By the way, this thing, it's not Orsted's thing today, by the way, so Orsted aren't going to be there. I think the Cabinet Office are going to be there. There'll be government officials there anyway. 4 till 7 in Castletown, 4 till 7 in Ramsey, 4 till 7 in Peel. So if you want to go there. John's with us. Oh, by the way, can anybody tell me then, because lots of people are saying the fact is that carbon comes out at the same rate. If something rots, if a wooden log or a tree rots in a plantation or anywhere else, it lets out the same amount of carbon as if it's burnt. It's just at a different rate. So there were, well, what do we do about those rotting trees then? Is there something we can do about them? John's with us now. Hello, John.
Hi, Andy. How are you? All right?
Very well, yeah. What's on your mind?
Just a quick one. Stu Peters putting this referendum forward.
Yeah.
It's flawed. It's flawed before it starts because this referendum, who it really matters to is future generations. Most of them aren't old enough to vote. So you're getting a totally distorted picture there. You're not getting a proper picture of what people really want. Green energy, as far as I'm concerned, is the way forward, but people are finding it hard to adjust to. That's my view.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, green energy seems expensive, doesn't it?
Initially, but once it's in, there's big savings. Big savings, be it solar, wind, or heat pumps. It's just that people are really finding it hard to get their head around it. You ask the younger generation, the world they're coming into, the world that we're leaving them. and I think you'll find they'll say yes.
Yeah. So is it the government's job then to subsidise that green energy? What I'm talking about is heat pumps and solar and what have you. I mean, of all the places, of all the buildings the government's gone, there are precious few solar panels on government buildings. So they're not exactly setting a good example, are they?
Well, maybe they're putting all the pies in at one pot type of thing. This wind farm's going to cost a lot of money, but it will pay off dividends in the future. We won't be reliant on the UK. We'll be selling them electric.
Okay. All right. Good to hear from you.
Yep.
Thanks for that. Thanks for calling today. What about the professions like teachers, police and social work and medics being forced to work over 70? Teaching is quite a physical and stressful job requiring lots of energy. To young students, I'm not sure many parents will be happy about an over 70 running a class of 25 or more primary school children. It will also require leadership in PE. Nursing involves lifting patients and equipment, and I guess surgeons will have to become consultants. Social work's another stressful job physically and mentally. Expecting the over 70s to mend roads and climb scaffolding is ludicrous. Many over 60s struggle to even get off the floor. I'm physically active and go to the gym, but hitting 70 has definitely seen a decline in my physical ability and energy, even though I'm in better condition than many my age, says H. I think younger people suggesting that pension age rise have no idea what they're talking about. Thank you, H. Well, I mean, what you're talking about is detail. This guy was talking about the numbers and basically the fact that somebody's got to pay for the pensions. Somebody's got to pay for the pensions that are coming out. And the point he was making was that delaying the retirement age, if you like, gives the pension pot time to recover. So either we've got to get lots more people working to put money into that, or the pension age has to go. That was his opinion anyway. And Dr. Allinson, the Treasury Minister, gave the government side of it. I mean, the fact is that the pension pot will run out at some point because, bluntly, people are living longer. That's incontrovertible. People are living a lot longer. More people are living longer than ever used to be the case. So at some point, the money's going to run out. What the detail is, as you say, about, you know, when people retire, whether they carry on working or whatever happens. And again, somebody's got to do the jobs. So the only other answer is immigration, to bring more people in to do the jobs. I went to a huge school in Barnsley in the early 1970s, quite a poor area, but the kids were happy, no mental health problems. What's changed, says Alan? The world, Alan, the world has changed. The young are probably anxious about the thought of working till they're 75. Says 404. And perhaps religious, Crystal said, perhaps religious education should be included in our history curriculum as it's part of our history and help young people to understand why many historical events and wars made history, says that. Good afternoon. Something that was quite annoying this morning on the way to work, the mountain roads closed, so all the traffic's filtering in through Peel Road and Laxey, and the DOI have a road sweeper out, sweeping the main road from Douglas to Peel at the height of the traffic, which is between 8 and 9 in the morning, causing all sorts of tailbacks. It's not rocket science, this is 508, but it's probably not the best time of day to be doing the road sweeping. Can't they wait until everybody was at least at work? I'm quite sure the leaves on the road would not cause that much danger as a slow-moving vehicle and people panicking trying to squeeze around the way to work or school. Who was involved for that? Right, if you want to get involved, remember, you text 166177, WhatsApp 166177, email studio at maxradio.com, call 66 1368 while the show is on. And when we're not on the air, the two ways of getting in touch, the email is maninline@maxradio.com. Lots of people were emailing maninline@maxradio.com yesterday, and I didn't get the message until afterwards. So out of hours, maninline@maxradio.com, and the answer phone 682-631. a note in from Sarah, who just said, what you said yesterday about standardising number plates on the Isle of Man, I've long thought of this. Why do we have a national number plate on the Isle of Man and then allow people to have UK-style plates? Do these people just want to be in the UK but don't quite say it? Why do we allow people to have UK-style plates when we have a national number plate for the Isle of Man? Shouldn't we have one or the other? Thanks for that, Sarah. Right, that's it. Back tomorrow, high noon, with another open line. Thanks to Howie on the phones today. WINT.